Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is going to be a good one. We got a full house today, Stone, and you must be exhausted. Your world tour is coming to a close tomorrow, right?
Well, no, I've got one more week, though, but you see what happens when we leave town for a week or two. It all starts to stack up.
Yeah, the guests start stacking up.
The booking team just absolutely fills the studio. So we have a studio full of guests, and then we have entourage
in the
gallery. So this is going to be a lot of fun, but we better jump right into it. Otherwise, we may not have time to do it. Right out of the box here, we have with us VP Innovation and Entrepreneurship with Metro Atlanta Chamber, Ms. Jennifer Shearer. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
We're all laughing here in the studio because we went to some pains to pick the order of people.
And which you've just disrupted.
Which I just totally screwed up. Well, we have two Jennifers here. And so that was the Jennifer at the bottom. You know what, Jennifer? We're delighted to have you. Welcome to the segment. Get us caught up on what the Metro Atlanta Chamber is doing.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me. So here to talk a little bit about what we're doing in the innovation and entrepreneurship space. So I'm the Vice President of Innovation and Entrepreneurship at the Metro Atlanta Chamber, and it's a bit of a new area for us. We're excited about all of the things that are going on here in the Metro Atlanta region around innovation and entrepreneurship, and excited to be a part of that and helping to drive innovation here.
Now, didn't Atlanta weren't they just named a top 5 or 6 city when it comes to technology or innovation?
I'm not familiar with that stat, but we do very well. We rank very well in various areas of innovation. So certainly we've got a number of technology sectors where we're really just knocking it out of the park. So our mobile technology sector, our health IT sector, our financial technology sector,
right,
doing very well there with the large concentration of companies that are growing here and moving here.
And also in gaming and entertainment as well, right?
Absolutely.
So now, what is your role exactly at the Chamber? You're in charge of innovation as a whole?
I'm in charge of innovation and entrepreneurship as a whole, and I work. We work on our own initiatives, but we also work closely with our public policy team and our economic development teams, really trying to engage our business community to make it Metro Atlanta region for innovators and entrepreneurs to thrive.
And your definition of Metro Atlanta is what?
29 counties. So a pretty big region.
So what can you give us kind of the edges of that? Is that like as far as Macon, or is it?
Not quite to Macon, but almost. And so about that perimeter all the way around. So not quite to Athens, but counties bordering Athens.
And it's not just the city of Atlanta.
It's much bigger than the city of Atlanta.
So now how do you engage all those counties that are in the outlying areas?
That's a great question. So one of the things that we've recently launched is what we call the Metro Atlanta Open Innovation Forum. And that is it's basically an online marketplace where companies, big and mid-sized companies in Metro Atlanta can post innovation needs. Mm-hmm. And those companies will get a discounted rate to post projects. And by posting projects, they get the services of a company called Nine Sigma, which helps companies integrate open innovation strategies into their business models. That is open to, so companies from anywhere in the metro region can post a project using at a discounted rate as a result of the partnership with the chamber. The other piece of it is that the open innovation means expanding your R&D capabilities basically by using solution providers or brains outside of your four walls. Mm-hmm. And so any solution provider in the metro region and outside of the metro region too can bid on those projects basically and offer a solution to that company.
So you're trying to be like a portal or a matchmaker for both sides of the equation?
Yeah, absolutely. Really focused on driving collaboration between the big businesses here and the small companies and the innovators at our universities and throughout the region.
So it combines not only the companies but universities as well. So the researchers and the PhD candidates and such, right?
Absolutely, yep.
Now, what are some of the needs that some of the companies have said they had?
Yeah, so they can be very technical in nature. So recently, a company was looking for an expert in silicon carbide for different applications.
And you were like, I know who, just who to call.
I was just having a drink with that guy.
Yeah, so very, very technical in nature. So, right. And the other thing I'll mention is in the fall, we'll do an event called Switch Pitch, which is similar in terms of the end goal, but it's where big companies will pitch projects, needs to a startup community. So there it's a little bit of the name, the, as the name implies.
Is it like The Voice where the startups have the chair turned and they have to pitch?
Well, not quite like that, but yeah, you know, that's interesting. We could consider blindfolding them or something.
Because, you know, that's not usually the case, right? It's always Correct. The startup that's pitching this big entity.
That's right. That's right.
Now, are you finding that the larger companies are open to this? Because that, you know, not... this is kind of a recent development. They haven't always been that open to partnering with the startup community.
They are open to that, and we did some diligence to determine what the community thought about these types of events, and we've had very good reception. So we've had companies wanting to participate. We did Switch Pitch for the first time last year, had some great companies, and have even more companies excited about getting up on stage and really finding ways to use the local community to help solve their problems. In the same with the Open Innovation Forum, they've been very enthusiastic about and realizing that it's a way for them to continue to innovate internally and stay relevant.
Now, is this something, if an enterprise organization is interested in this, do you kind of help them through this, because this process might be new to them?
That's our yes. So we can certainly talk with them, but we will likely direct them to Nine Sigma, who will then sit down with the company and work through the project with them. They actually help them articulate the need statement, and so do some whiteboarding sessions and really kind of get them comfortable with it. And you know, the companies can, if they want to post a project, they can put their name out there and say, hey, we're company X. This is what we need, or they can work with Nine Sigma to draft a statement that's anonymous. And so
they can be anonymous.
They can be anonymous, yes.
And then Nine Sigma becomes the kind of the point person for them or on behalf of them?
That's right. And so Nine Sigma will accept all of the proposals and screen the proposals.
Right.
And
so then the big company doesn't have to be like the bad guy.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
So now how did you develop this relationship with Nine Sigma?
Yeah. So we were looking really for ways that we could connect our big companies with our innovators and our entrepreneurs. And so we started exploring, and like I said, we did some diligence about what different sorts of models might work. And we identified Nine Sigma. Nine Sigma's done a lot of work, certainly in the open innovation space. And one example of work they've done is a Grand Challenge event that they've launched with the NFL and Under Armour to develop better equipment for the NFL to prevent concussions. And they've done a similar project with GE and the NFL looking at new diagnostics for treatment of traumatic brain injury.
And is that a group in Georgia Tech was working on that?
No. So that's a Grand Challenge where they're putting that challenge out to
the
world.
They're just putting the challenge. Because yes. I know a group in Georgia Tech was working on that technology.
That's entirely possible. And it may be that... but that somebody from this region has actually successfully submitted a proposal and gotten funding. I don't know specifically, but it's entirely possible. So we have a lot of great research going on at Georgia Tech and all of the other universities around here.
Now, is it hard for the chamber to kind of get the word out about the region? Because we are doing some good work here, and that's, you know, I don't know if we're as appreciated nationwide as maybe we should be.
Well, is it easy? Mm-hmm. It's not easy, but we do, as you pointed out, have a lot of great work going on here. And one of the things that we as a chamber and our region is focused on is really telling our story, talking about all of the great things that are going on here, talking about the successes, talking about the exits. And, you know, we're really putting ourselves on the map from a technology perspective. There really are, you know, in terms of you know, we're seeing an uptick in things like venture capital funding. And while we have some work to do on that, we're certainly moving in the right direction. Last year, we saw the highest amount of venture capital coming to Georgia companies in over a decade. So that's a good sign. A lot of these technology companies are require venture backing to get to the next level.
Sure. And then, and more importantly, they're getting the funding and staying here in Atlanta. They're not having to move to where the money is.
That's right. That's right.
So now, what is your biggest challenge in your role?
My biggest challenge is trying to find ways to really engage and finding the right ways to engage everybody in the ecosystem. We're really about creating an ecosystem where everybody knows everybody and everybody's aware of collaboration opportunities.
So when you say everybody, who are you referring to?
So I'm referring to entrepreneurs. I'm referring to innovators at universities. I'm referring to even mid-sized companies. There's a lot of mid-sized companies that potentially could work with larger companies or could work with smaller companies. And so trying to figure out ways to make those connections and also help facilitate those collaborations it's ongoing. Going challenge, but something we're committed to.
So now, does that kind of drill down to, you know, actually the membership side of this as well, or you're more looking at it kind of a bird's eye view of everything?
So we certainly start with our membership in terms of engagement. So we have a lot of the major corporations and mid-sized companies as members of the chamber, and so we start there in terms of one, figuring out if they how interested and how they want to work with the smaller companies and the investigators at the various universities, and so that's a good starting base. But again, you know, we're talking about creating an ecosystem, and the ecosystem is I view it as inclusive as opposed to exclusive.
Right. So now if somebody was interested in the Open Innovation Forum, what are the kind of steps to get involved?
Yeah, so the thing to do is to, you can go to the Metro Atlanta Chamber website, which is just metroatlantachamber.com, and you can search for the Open Innovation Forum, and it'll pop up, and what you'll see is a list of projects that are, you'll see some archived projects on there, but you'll see some projects, they check back often for live projects that are mm-hmm. coming online from our Metro Atlanta companies. You can also go to a website called 9sites.com, which is Nine Sigma's website.
It's spelled out, or the number 9?
The number 9 spelled out. Yep, NINESIGHTS.com.
And then, so is it kind of like a Kickstarter page where you see a project and then you can kind of sign up for it, or if you think you're a good match?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you can learn about the project. You can learn about more specifically what the company is looking for, solutions that they'd be willing to consider, and then things that won't work, things that they're not looking for.
Oh, so they'll tell you.
Which can be very helpful. And you know, some of them, depending on the company, will post a funding amount. So the idea is that if these companies have committed some level of funding, mm-hmm. and so if they find the right proposal, there'll be a level of funding committed to that. That's not always disclose. That's up to the company as to whether or not they want to disclose it.
Are there any success stories you can share?
Not yet. We just launched this in March, and so,
okay, so it's brand new.
So hopefully I'll be back here at some point next year talking about success stories. So certainly lots of success stories from Nine Sigma and their work.
But and they're a local company, or they're national?
They're national. They're based in Cleveland, Ohio, but they just opened an office here
in order to help us drive this project?
Yes.
Are they working with the chambers all over the country?
You know, this is a bit of a new model
this
for them.
A beta?
And so there is one other program in the state of Ohio that this is modeled after, and they've have seen great success out of it in terms of driving new revenues at companies and also job creation. And so we're hoping that we see the same success here, and they are exploring this type of model with other chambers throughout the country.
I mean, this is news to me. Did you know anything about this?
No, did not. That's why she's here.
Right. Again, you leave town for a week, you know, you book a few guests and you find out some really cool stuff. Well, keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for having me again. It's great to get the word out.
Yeah.
Now,
well,
what do you need more of?
We need more companies to post projects, and we need, and so one thing I should mention is that while Nine Sigma will take these projects and they will match make globally with the global solution provider community. One thing that we're working on with our partners throughout the region is marketing each project locally. So what mm-hmm. we want is if there is a local solution provider in
right.
the metro
that's
region,
that's what you prefer,
that's
right?
That's what we prefer. That's right. That's the big success. And
right.
so,
if you get both parties here in town that didn't know each other that's
right.
are kind of get together because of you guys.
You got it. You got it.
And then website again for that?
MetroAtlantaChamber.com.
And it's the Open Innovation Forum.
Yes.
All right. Well, hang with us, will you, while we visit with our other guests?
I sure will.
Okay. Next up on the Jennifer Show here at Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us founder, lead consultant with JMAC Consulting. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Miss Jennifer McKenna. Did you learn anything in that last segment, Miss Jennifer?
Yes, it's fascinating. I probably should know more as an entrepreneur myself.
So what JMAC Consulting, what do you guys specialize in?
Change management consulting and strategic facilitation.
That's right in Stone's bailiwick there.
Oh, I've been fired from several change management consulting firms. We probably know a lot of the same folks.
So what is change management?
Well, I created my own own methodology.
There you go. So, that's how to do it.
So I can only speak to what I do.
Okay.
And I basically meet clients where they are and help them get where they want to go. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of have a...
What size clients?
You know, my clients range from a one-man entrepreneur to a Fortune 100 company with a startup within.
Oh,
and
wow.
Everything in between. Lots of nonprofits, small and mid-sized businesses. The thing that defines my niche market is a business leader's readiness and taking ownership for making those fundamental changes.
Oh, so we're out
easy.
For that, right? We're not good. Personal accountability is not one of our strengths. So.
Well, so given that, I find that my specialization is really more on an emotional level, quite honestly.
Really?
Getting the person out of the way of themselves and their own success.
So there's some self-sabotage sometimes with some clients?
Nearly every time.
So, Nat, go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering how the sales and marketing thing works for you, because all kidding aside, I have spent a little bit of time on the periphery of some consulting firms. I mean, are you out there? Have you been established enough now that the phone just rings, or do you have to kick up a little dirt, or is it referrals or thought leadership? How's the business come in?
Sure. So for the last 12 years, it's been referrals, word of mouth. And so this is one of my first big steps to go out there and proactively market my business.
Cool.
So now have you had some scar tissue around change that you said, I got to get in there and fix that?
You know, I do. It's interesting you ask. It all started with actually my physical health.
Oh, wow.
So I was a very young nonprofit executive, and I was diagnosed with a chronic condition, which was directly related to workaholism.
Oh.
And I lived by the philosophy of work hard, play hard.
Right.
And it caught up. And I was told I'd be on drugs the rest of my life. And I was in my late 20s. Mm-hmm. And I said to my doctor, wait a minute, by the time I'm 60, how many drugs will I be taking?
Right.
How many will treat side effects? No, thank you. So I had to go on them in order to function. I was very ambitious and I had a big workload. And I was on those medication for 18 months. And I made a commitment that in that 18 months, I was going to go within myself and study very rigorously how I got into that position and how to get out. Mm-hmm. I have not been on those drugs since, and it's been nearly 20 years. And so interestingly, I had, during that time, I had left my position to start a family and decided to just call a few colleagues and say, hey, do you have any projects? So I started consulting by default. And then also others saw the transformation in my personal life and asked me if I would start coaching them.
Mm-hmm.
After about 2 years of doing that and studying others' success stories, none of whom called me because of a physical condition, I realized that I could integrate that methodology into a business platform. And that's how it started.
And then when you're working with leaders, are there any tips and tricks? Maybe some easy stuff?
Well, so self-awareness is incredibly crucial for a leader. So I'm a big fan of take assessments, get a coach, work with someone, increase your self-awareness, because oftentimes leaders, whether they know it or not, are leading by example. They're not in integrity. Their business is not in brand integrity internally, because what they're thinking, what they're saying, and what they're doing do not line up.
Right.
And it's in that alignment where the magic is. And oftentimes we're just not aware of when that's going in three different directions.
And do you find that some leaders are hesitant to like ask for help and get the coach or get somebody to help them because they view it as a sign of weakness maybe, or that they're supposed to know all the answers?
I do think that definitely exists. I think a lot of leaders have made their way to the top by being knowledgeable and being good at what they do. Mm-hmm. And it's not quite as easy to recognize when they've got their own blind spots and pitfalls. Because as you advance in your career, you stumble into new challenges, new obstacles that you didn't face in your previous experience. But I also run into a lot of people who say, I know so-and-so who really needs you.
Not me.
And
boy, would you be good for Julie, then, if you could fix Julie.
Exactly. So I'm real big on ownership, and I really only work with those who are ready to take ownership. This is not a hard sales pitch where I go in and I try to convince someone that they need to change.
Right.
And I think that's probably why so much of my work has been referral based.
Right.
So when someone's
selling,
ready, they know
they're
it.
They're buying. You're not selling.
That's right.
Now, what does that first kind of conversation look like? Can you walk us through that?
Or well, she gets the money up front. she might make them mad if she's going to have conversations about personal accountability.
I do. You know. we laugh at that. However, there are times when I, in my setup, say there may be moments when what I tell you is going to be irritating, mm-hmm. and I just want you to remember this initial conversation when that comes.
I warned you. So that's you taking accountability, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I work with beliefs, and oftentimes they're unconscious beliefs, and they're driven by a neurological pattern. So all I'm really trying to do is increase their awareness, give them tools to change it.
Mm-hmm.
We move from self-awareness to self-management. And it's interesting. And I'm not sure I answered your question.
Well, I'm just trying to get, so the listener kind of understands, if they were to engage you, what to kind of get a feel of what that
sure.
first conversation, like
yes,
what are some of the things that you would cover, or maybe they have homework to do before they even have that first conversation.
So in the first conversation, I'm really just asking a lot of questions. I want to know what their pain points are. My first question out of the gate usually is, why am I here?
Mm-hmm.
What is hurting? People don't typically change unless it hurts bad enough.
Right.
So what are those? And then I go to the task of asking questions that are customized to what I'm hearing that answer to be, so that I can get underneath the symptoms and get to the root of it.
Now, you mentioned that your background was in nonprofit. Do you see any difference in leaders of nonprofit versus for-profit companies?
I do. I think in general, oftentimes they are all equally skilled and mm-hmm. savvy. However, I would really like to change the mindset of a lot of nonprofit leaders from thinking that it's a handout or a charity, and really owning that it's a business, and people need you to be successful, and to think really in more prosperous terms.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of times they're not looking at it that way. They think the kind of they're doing, or the donor is doing a favor to the organization.
Exactly.
Rather than the organization providing a service for
exactly.
the donor and their community.
And that it's a win-win. And mm-hmm. and likewise, I'd like to see more business leaders strive for the win-win in customer service,
right,
and in employee health and work-life balance internally, to match how much they want to increase that bottom line.
Right. So less transactional, more relationship-driven, and right. really serving.
Right. And so time and again, I'm able to show where the byproduct is. You know, everybody does win.
So do you see the same thing over and over again as much as you work in? You must see some patterns start to develop, and you walk in, you hear a couple of things, you roll your eyes and go, oh, here we go again, you know, page 3, paragraph 4.
It's pretty predictable.
Right?
Well,
is
there
it?
Are,
is
well,
it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there are just some human behaviors.
But we're
that
all
are,
unique
oh.
and
yes.
special.
So
that's right.
So what I see is the likeness between all of the unique personalities, skill sets, size of business, aspirations, all of those things vary.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why I don't have a niche market that's defined by that is because underneath it, fundamentally, human behavior, human beliefs, it all looks and sounds a lot alike.
So what are some traits of a good leader in your mind?
One who does proactively lead by example and is in integrity with the business goals. So they're thinking, acting, speaking, all in alignment with what is in everyone's best interest and in the best interest of their business. Also, someone who is very open and honest and isn't afraid to put their fear up front and look at it.
So show some vulnerability.
Show some vulnerability. You really establish a much stronger loyalty mm-hmm. and camaraderie among your team when you do that. They want to know you're human, but they also want to know that you're doing something about those vulnerabilities. You know, the other thing is really honor your employees. They're your greatest asset. We hear this all the time in motivational speaking,
wow.
and yet business behavior tends to act otherwise.
So now you'd be more comfortable if they say people are our most important asset, you've heard a million times, right? And if they're behaving not in accordance with that, to be congruent, you'd be okay with them saying people aren't our most important asset.
Yeah, and I would say thank you. It's been really nice working with you, and I would recommend someone else. Right.
Because that wouldn't be congruent with your...
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, and so that's brand integrity for me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So do you do any open enrollment education? Are you writing books? Is there a book in you? Is there...
I've actually already recorded a 3-disc CD set and a working journal that goes with that. I've got a workbook. And that platform is really for the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am going to start tailoring that and doing a business version.
Uh-huh. Very cool. All right. Thank you. What's next? Is there an event or anything like that coming up that we ought to know about? What's next for you?
Well, so what's next for me is growth. I'd like to scale my business. I've been on my own for 12 years and have loved doing this. And now I see a greater need. The greater business environment is ready to change more so than, we had the recession and we had all of these things that really caused some tremendous paralysis across the board. And now I really need to grow. I have... my demand and my supply have got to match up.
So strategic alliances, has there been any thought, attention, or conversation around maybe forming an alliance with someone else in a different discipline or domain and approaching a larger client or something like that together?
Yes, and I think that's brilliant. I have some really strong relationships headed in that direction. I've had some preliminary conversations about it, and it's really about me taking the time to create the bandwidth to see that through.
Right. Isn't that always the balance, right?
Yes,
for the small companies.
Yes.
But listen, I've got an inroad over there at the chamber.
Yeah.
I know this
lady
named Jennifer.
Uh-huh.
I can hook you up.
Oh,
you
just... perfect. Let's talk.
All right. Let's make sure we leave our listeners with some coordinates. Best way for them to reach out, have a conversation with you or one of your emerging partners.
Yes. If they would just go to jmaxconsulting.com, and there is a contact area there.
And that's jmacconsulting.com.
That's right.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for coming and hanging with us this afternoon. You're going to stay with us a little longer? We got some more folks to talk to.
Absolutely. I'd love to. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we are going to transition out of the Jennifer portion of our program. And now we're going to talk to the Grand Poobah, the Chief Mohaw of a company called Aptian. Please join me in welcoming to the show Chief Executive Officer Kim Eaton, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, thank you.
I learned a lot in the past 30 minutes.
So you knew I was going to ask, right?
Yeah.
So you wrote, I learned this.
Yeah, I was taking lots of notes.
So can you share a little bit about Aptian? What are you guys up to?
So we are a global software company based in the Dunwoody area. We have about 5,000 customers that we serve, and we provide a variety of solutions to manufacturers, distributors, call centers, financial services companies, and the list goes on. Mm-hmm. So quite a diverse company, but really focused on helping companies you might recognize actually run their operation behind the scenes. So,
and this is a B2B?
Yes, B2B software company. And many of our products have actually been in the industry for a long time. So several of our products were kind of industry leaders even before technology was an exciting thing that
before
it is
now.
Before
it was now. Cool.
Yeah, before it was cool. That's exactly right.
And she's the Barbara Mandrell of her arena. Yes.
And then you acquired them?
Yeah, so actually the story behind Aptian is it's two companies that were actually acquisitive in and of themselves, and those companies were actually merged to create Aptian about 2 years ago. So that's why we're such an eclectic, diverse group of different products, but all with one way of working with our customers and one way of supporting them.
And then what are the challenges of having that kind of diversity in your organization?
Yeah. So just out of experience, when you work for a company that has one mission and maybe you serve one industry with a suite of products, you can really rally your teams around what you do, and you can get really passionate about it. So we have to do that for 27 different products. And we have to help, our entire employee base of, 1,300 people across the globe all, you know, feel a sense of pride, both for the product they support, but also as part of the collective Aptian. So that's a big challenge and one that we're striving to resolve.
So like one product, one server, that's easy. Anybody can do that, right?
Oh, I'd like to think so, yes.
So do that times 27. You're talking about a trick.
I want to talk about or learn about recruiting, because I would think would be a real challenge, very rewarding once you crack the code. But talk about recruiting a little bit in an organization like yours.
Yeah, so recruiting I think it's a challenge for everyone. And I think especially in Atlanta, the market is... it's, you know, a lot of demand for really top talent. And so we, I think, have a philosophy of, you know, share our passion, share our strategy. And if people don't connect to that, then they probably are weeded out. You know, I think we also do some technical testing. We actually are looking for people with the right aptitude and the right attitude. And that has really, really helped us find the people that, you know, inside in the core really fit what we're trying to do.
Culture first, outside, like skills second, kind of?
Well, to be fair and to have integrity, as Jennifer said, we actually do skill first, and then culture is very closely
aligned.
Second,
right.
And even in the test, a lot of those cultural traits actually come out.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Now, to be congruent, because customer service is a kind of the secret sauce, right?
Yes, yes.
So having a good culture that's relationship driven has to be very aligned at every step of the...
It does. And I would say that, you know, when a company like ours, who have been part of two different organizations with different cultures, then you try to bring them together, the people that work for us, and we have people who have worked for us for more than 25 years. We have
Of the separate companies,
in all the different pieces and parts of the company. So, you know, really trying to help them feel good about all the changes they've been through. A big focus of ours is on the employees right now, because we really believe if employees are excited and engaged and want to do what they do every day and are passionate, our customers, right, are not going to go anywhere, right? Our customers actually really relate. And I think it's why many of our customers renew our support contracts every year, is because mm-hmm. of the people they interact with that they've worked with for so long.
Now, do you have any tips for companies out there that want to kind of develop this good employee engagement?
Oh, I wish I did. But yes, I mean, I have some ideas. I think, first of all, I think communicate. To me, it is... And communicate not just from the top down through email. I think that's probably been our biggest challenge because of how global we are.
Right. Yeah, people all over the place.
That's right. But it's small teams, you know, really talking to people about what it is we're trying to achieve and making sure that people really understand. I think you have to have that foundation first before you really have a good work environment and that your employees are really engaged. I think what we see happening is when we've done that, our employees self-correct each other. Mm-hmm. I don't have to come in, or, you know, somebody else on the executive team doesn't have to come in and say, no, we're doing this. You actually see and hear other, you know, individuals actually telling each other how to operate.
But how do you get the messaging down into the kind of that, so it's so clear that everybody gets it? You know, you might think it's one thing when you say, you know, integrity, and then the person four levels down
have to define it.
Right.
Yeah. So I think what we do is we use lots of examples. I think the thing that is one global in nature and works across many languages is, you know, telling stories of examples of things that happen with our customers.
So like sharing kind of best practices or success stories.
Sharing success stories, no matter how small or large, even if it's, you know, that somebody delivered a piece of code earlier than they had intended to. We talk about the impact of that, the downstream mm-hmm. effect and the positive of that,
right,
so that other people can relate and see even just small things, right, how they actually change the dynamic of the company. So we use examples. We, believe it or not, a year ago or 6 months ago when I started with the company, we didn't have a vision statement. Mm-hmm. So I think we started with that. We tried to really align everybody and understand why we were here. That's common across 27 products is what we've been able to create, thank goodness. And I think when you start talking that way and you start pointing back to where we're
kind
trying
of the
to
bigger
head,
why rather than why. Kind of like, yep. Oh, this is what this software does.
That's right. Know? That's right. We do try to explain what our software does because
right.
people that, can.
The clarity, you know, is important.
The clarity is important.
But if they don't really understand the big why, then that's easy for them to get off track.
That is right. And because we work with and we've had customers for many, many years, I think you can get really not complacent, but you can forget, you know, the value that you actually really help drive for your customer. So we constantly kind of show and talk about the benefits that we that our solutions actually help drive for our customers.
Now, is that part of the equation of having the people that are dealing with the customers kind of solicit this kind of information and have the conversations of, look, to best serve you, can you share how, you know, what you like and what you don't like and how we better, you know, can better serve you?
Yeah. So we actually do that in a couple different ways. Our, what we call our customer solutions group.
Right. Cause this could be scary for some companies. Cause like you can open up a can
really
of worms.
Want to
right?
know. Yeah. You know? Don't well, really fill out that card or answer.
Just tell us good stuff.
Yeah. Oh, believe me, we don't have to ask for the bad stuff. Right. Any company, when you're in a support, I mean, I think that's also as your products progress, they're going to get pickier and pickier right. about everything.
I used to like it the way it was last time. Why'd you update
That's right.
it?
Why'd you change it? Yeah. Right. So, so I think the thing that has been really, really good about our changes, bringing the companies together, is we have our support and services team actually work together. They align under one person. And so when a services person is out helping to do an upgrade and they're talking to the customer, they can share a lot of the good things that are happening. They bring that back to the support team. They bring it back. And our account managers know as well. Usually that's the whole purpose is our account managers really have a strong relationship with our customers.
And then they can say, hey, you know what? One of my other clients are using it this way. You might consider
yes,
doing this,
right?
Yes,
that happens a lot. Yes. And many of our services team have been working with our customers for many, many years. So they share that. We have a strong user community too that talks to each other that we
oh,
try
really?
To facilitate, whether it's
nice. Do you do conferences like some of the user groups do?
We do. Yeah. For the most part, we are driven by what our customers, you know, want us to put into the products. And we will say no on some things or we'll try to come up with a more innovative way. You know,
right.
you have to understand their intent.
Right.
You do have to think about it a little bit. But yeah.
So those must be exciting for you.
It's been a very exciting
ride here.
Yeah. Huh? And, you know, speaking as Jennifer was talking about change management, it just reminded me that's really what we have been focused on is, you know, when you bring different company and people with different perspectives across, you know, many 17 different countries, everybody has a different perspective. And so that's the biggest focus that we have is just kind of getting everybody into the same place. And that's hard work.
And really then is. You have the layer of global, right? So
yes.
then you got different cultures to deal with
that's
as well.
That's exactly right. Yeah. 35% of our business is outside of North America. So it's a pretty healthy chunk of our business.
So now this is your first go round as CEO?
Yeah. So I ran a division, the hospitality division at NCR prior to this, but I was not the CEO. So I
so
definitely
how's this
understand.
Hat feel
yeah.
on your head?
You know, it's been great. I think, I feel equipped. I feel like, you know, the background, but you know what? Every day is a new day. So there's something new that happens that you have to, reach down far inside of you and challenge a piece.
Now, and to your point earlier about change and maybe, our resident change consultant could weigh in on this, but I've always been of the opinion that whatever you do well, whatever you don't do well, they're both magnified when you're going through major, large, complex change. Has that been your experience?
I would agree. Yeah.
yeah?
Do you agree, Jennifer?
I absolutely agree. and as the famous Oprah would say, what you focus on expands. So
yes.
Which way do you want to go with that road?
Yes. We're a big, we as our executive team are actually big believers in focusing on strengths. So we talk about them all the time as a team, and we talk about, okay, in order, these are our strengths, and we complement each other pretty well, but, you know, what else do we need in that group to really challenge us and make sure that we're, you know, we don't have a gap? So I think what we've seen is the more we focused on our strengths, actually the more our work quality as an organization has risen. So I'm a huge believer in focusing on that. And, you know, people should come to usually what you are good at is what you really like to do.
Right.
So when you see people unhappy, it's probably because they're working on things they don't
right,
think they're
very good
at.
Right, they're kind of misaligned,
right? Yeah, yeah.
So now you've been in Atlanta your whole career? Or you've traveled?
Almost. I've been here since 1991. I worked for what is now Accenture in the Chicago office for the first couple years of my career and then transferred to Atlanta and have been here ever since.
That's now, right. What have you seen as Atlanta as an environment to run a company now and to be part of a large organization? Are you seeing kind of the synergies of the large and the small companies working together?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, it was great to listen to both Jennifers, you know, just in terms of opportunity. I think we've been so inwardly focused over the past year or so that we're just now starting to really try to network and use a lot of the
leverage
tools
some of the resources,
capabilities
right?
that we have. And we're excited about being able to be in that phase of our progress.
Now, I'm aware that you have a son, I believe, that's at Georgia Tech. So how has that Georgia Tech been for your son? And do you guys get a lot of graduates from Georgia Tech in your organization?
Yeah, actually, we do have quite a few Georgia Tech grads, some technical and even from the business school, which has been great source of really talented folks. And yes, it has challenged my son. My son was one of those kids that in high school could just kind of ride by because he was smart enough to just get really great grades. And his first year at Tech was a wake-up call. Exactly what he needed. So he's in his third, he's finishing his third year. He's in computer science, believe it or not, and is very excited. I mean, I can't get him to stop talking. Most of the time I'm like, do you have to show up another weekend? I need a break. But no, he's he really enjoys it. Georgia Tech's been great for him, definitely.
And then what, as a global organization, what is the reputation of the colleges here or universities here in Atlanta?
Oh, fantastic. I think whenever you say Georgia Tech, for example, you know, it resonates with just about everyone outside of the country. I think people know and understand, and that reputation is definitely very high.
Yep. Now, for Aptian, what's next for you?
Well, we are, I kind of mentioned, we've actually just launched a new strategy, and we're I would say, embarking upon, you know, how we progress against that. Two key things. One is focus on the customer. So realigning how we work with our customers, how we actually sell them other products that we have that can really add value.
Because that's probably a challenge they may not be aware of all 27.
They aren't.
Right?
They aren't. And our relation.
An opportunity as well.
That's exactly right. So this year is a reset year to say, let's rebuild our relationships with our customers. And then the other thing that we'll be very active with is acquiring other businesses similar to those 27 inside, or complementary kind of strategic gaps, maybe around some of those that we can provide. So a lot of fun. So more business coming to Atlanta.
All right, so let's make sure that our listeners know how they can reach out and learn more.
You bet. So you can reach me at Kim, that's just how it sounds, K-I-M at or dot Eaton, E-A-T-O-N at Aptian, A-P-T-E-A-N.com.
All right.
And that's a website, A-P-T-E-A-N.com.
Yes, so you can also go to our website at www.aptian.com.
Okay, Doug. Well, stay with us. We're going to talk to the money guy
Absolutely.
Next.
Great.
Yeah? All right. Yeah, we're going to talk to chairman with Primo Ventures, Mr. Jason Primo. How you doing over there, man?
Hey, very good. Thanks for having me.
Well, you've been very patient. I've seen you nod your head a lot. I don't know if I caught you taking notes or not, but you seemed very engaged, like you were getting some value out of the conversation. Yeah?
Well, I'm a Georgia Tech alumni, so I like
There you go.
I like what was being said, right?
Very, very good.
So now you're a venture capitalist?
Yeah, so we're a venture capital team that's focused on investing a little differently, in mainly in small to mid-market manufacturing. There's a lot of venture capital, of course, going into software and high tech.
Right, anybody could do that.
Right, sure. but no offense to our friends in software, but if you look at the Southeast, there's about 20% of the GDP involved in manufacturing, and there's a lot of great small companies here as well that aren't a very good fit for a lot of traditional private equity. So we're looking to invest in those really good businesses that have been built up over the years and scale them up to the next level.
So now how do you reach out to them? How do you identify them?
Well, it's not easy. If you take a look at a lot of small companies, typically if you look at the landscape, they're between 1 and 5 million in sales, which actually makes up the bulk of the supply chain, not the big companies. And a lot of them have grown through word of mouth marketing. They don't do a lot of outreach, so it takes a lot of things like this to get your word out, and a lot of networking. There's a lot of great businesses around the state that are in a lot of the community, so it takes a lot of outreach to find them.
Now, do you work with kind of strategic partners like banks or CPA firms to help you identify them?
They are more on the post-transaction side, but we've got a lot of skin in the game. So our venture team is not traditional group of financiers and bankers. We're ex-manufacturers that have typically run and grown and sold our own businesses. So we've got a lot of passion in that area. So that means we get very hands-on, and we can do a lot
ourselves. So you're just not cutting checks, you're getting involved in the business.
Yeah,
cutting
a check is probably that's the least most important thing. You've heard a lot about people as your most important assets in small companies. It's definitely the case. So our venture team is involved in mentoring the management that we eventually recruit and place in the companies that we acquire.
Do you have a sweet spot or niche?
Definitely. So if you take a look at most segments in manufacturing, whether it's metal machining or people that make plastic injection molding or the things that you might see that go onto the Boeing aircraft or your Toyota Avalon, a lot of those are not large companies. They're small companies. When you get into the tier two, tier three, about 80% of the companies are less than $5 million in sales, and about 40% are less than $1 million in sales. That makes up the bulk of the supply chain. So that sweet spot between the $1 million to $5 million range, those are typically really, really well-run small businesses. A lot of them have been started by baby boomers 20, 30, or even 40 years ago.
Right.
And now they're looking to retire, and sometimes their exit strategy didn't work out. Maybe their son didn't want to get into manufacturing. Maybe they wanted to make websites.
Is that where you find that a lot of them think that a family member is going to be the successor, but then, you know, that
over
family member...
Over half. Wow. Shock. I mean, this has been quite a unique data collection exercise. So if you look at most private equity groups don't really want to do a transaction less than $10 million in sales.
Right. So you're kind of under the radar here.
So yeah, we're going after what I call kind of the minor league market, but it's the bulk of the supply chain, and we feel it's really underserved. And like venture capital, it does take a lot of risk. But typically venture capitalists invest in what they know, but it represents a very large opportunity to scale.
And then these are businesses that are those boring businesses that, you know, you drive by on the road and they're minding their own business.
Right.
You know, they're successful and profitable, but they're not like kind of the sexy businesses, right?
They do. Most of them have been run as what we call lifestyle businesses. They really didn't necessarily want to grow too large. And there's a lot of benefits with that. But as the global competition has gotten fierce, it takes a lot more capital to keep your factories modernized and to keep up with the competition. So you kind of have to change the rules of the game a little bit. But again, unfortunately, a lot of them are run by baby boomers who are retiring at about 8,000 baby boomers a day, by the way. And America, we haven't done that great of a job replacing them. So that's why you see a lot of emphasis on STEM education and really changing the paradigm, because the manufacturing climate today is not like what it was 40 years ago. It's typically a lab environment, very clean, very high tech, very high skilled, very high paid workforce too.
Now, if somebody wanted to get on your radar, what should they be doing to be attractive to a firm like yours?
Well, again, we're looking for those involved in manufacturing, very specifically for that. It could be a product or it could be a manufacturing service. In the Southeast, we're focused on Georgia and the Carolinas because it's a great region. It's pro-business and there's a lot of growth, and we've got a lot of great workforce development initiatives in the state of Georgia and the Carolinas. So people are important. We're looking for companies that are typically well-established, multi-generational often, manufacturers. Could be plastic injection molding, metal machining, sheet metal, all those boring things, but they keep our cars together and our planes flying. And they're a very important part of the supply chain here in America.
Well, just so you know, we manufacture conversations and thought leadership here at Business Radio X.
Well, if you do it out of titanium, I'm interested in acquiring you.
Now, I see that you are an angel investor as well. Why and what's the difference?
Well, so the venture capital and private equity are more focused on existing businesses, but kind of as part of that, you meet a lot of wonderful entrepreneurs and innovators, and some of them need a little bit of incubation, that we say. They may have a great idea, but they don't know how to get it to the next level. How do you get out of the garage? And there is a gap of funding when you get outside the money you can raise out of friends, family, and fools, as we say, or maxing out your credit cards, and then attracting, getting to the point where you attract venture capitalists that then will take a look at 1, 2, 3, or more million investments. So that kind of gap between 100,000, 200,000, 300,000, that's kind of what most angel investors do. And I specifically do angel investing in manufacturing and products. So people that have hardware or a real innovative product and want to get into the market, then we take a look at what does it take to get them out of the garage and get some traction. And it's a nice dovetail fit into the manufacturing acquisitions that we have.
Because you're growing your own.
Yeah, absolutely. So
exactly what he's doing.
That's a good summary. We're growing our own. We're our own farm team, right. in a way. And with our manufacturing capabilities, we typically have a lot of capacity that we can set aside to help incubate that new entrepreneur that wants to bring a product to life.
Now, we've heard in here many times the difference between smart money and dumb money. If you're a manufacturer, this sounds like smart money because you're not just bringing money to the table. You're bringing kind of the expertise and the connections, maybe some distribution to help them really expand their business.
So it's what is most important is the ability to mentor and to guide and to bring connections and thought leadership and experience to the table, not just a check. So if you're someone that's looking to sell your business or you're an entrepreneur looking to grow, you don't necessarily want to take a check from 6 really rich dentists. They may be able to write you a check, but are they going to help you architect your new sales strategy, or how do you get your product to market and message to your customer? How do you develop a supply chain? So you want to partner with people that have been there, done that.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's make sure that our listeners, especially those that have something innovative they want to bring to market in the manufacturing space, if they want to have a conversation with you, somebody on your team, what's the best path?
Yeah, so check us out on our website. You can find the criteria and kind of what we're looking for in a little bit more detail, and then also the process that we take through as well. Because it's hard for a business owner that is really giving up their baby that they may have created 40 years ago. And that's PremoVentures.com, PremoVentures.com.
All right, and for some of the younger folks out there that are thinking about maybe taking this sort of path in their career to be entrepreneurial and seek out this kind of capital, what should they be reading? Who should they be hanging out with, or go back to school? What's your message?
Well, for those here in Georgia, you've got some great resources here at the Georgia Tech Venture Labs communities.
Oh, yeah.
Seek out mentors. Don't do anything by yourself. If you're anything that you do in life, you should gather a team of mentors and surround yourself with some wisdom, get some advice.
What a fantastic segue to our next segment. Thank you so much for coming, and please come again, will you?
Will do.
All right. You ready for the headliner, Lee?
I am ready.
Man, she's been hanging out there so quietly the entire time. She's with the Village, Atlanta Tech Village. She's got something really cool coming up. She's a community manager out there. Please join me in welcoming to the program Miss Erin Rozentowski. Lewis, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you. How are you?
All right. You got to get in there a lot closer.
Okay.
And there you go.
There you go.
You're here not to talk about the Village today, even though it is a wonderful place. You're here to talk about Steve Case and Revolution.
Correct. I am. So Steve Case, y'all all probably are familiar with him. He's one of the founders of AOL and has a venture capital firm now called Revolution. He's chairman and CEO there. And he will be coming to Atlanta next week, Thursday, May 7th. And this is part of his Rise of the Rest tour.
Yeah, why don't you share a little bit about the Rise of the Rest tour and what he's been up to for the last, what has been, a month or two now?
This is actually the third time that he's done this tour over the last couple years. And the whole thesis is there are all these amazing things happening in cities that are not traditionally thought of.
Outside of Silicon Valley or Boston.
Mm-hmm. So he'll be visiting Richmond, Raleigh-Durham, Charleston, Atlanta, and New Orleans. And to shed a light on all the great things that are happening here, the fact that these cities are on the rise, that there are all these jobs that are being created from startups. All the bigger companies actually started as startups, so we should rally behind some
exactly.
of the small
exactly.
companies.
What a concept, right?
Right? So novel.
So now he is here to kind of shed a light on some of the activity here.
Right.
But he's also here to write a check to somebody, right?
Right. Super exciting. So 8 startups are going to compete for a chance to have a $100,000 investment from him that evening. And so I think...
And it's right on the spot, right? This isn't like
that day.
This
that,
isn't like Shark Tank where then they on TV, it sounds like they give you the money, but you may never get it.
Right. You will actually get it. One of those 8 startups will walk away with his money.
Mm-hmm. And then have you picked the 8 startups yet?
They have. They'll be announced tomorrow. I know who they are, but I can't tell you.
All right. What do they rhyme with? So there are 8 Atlanta-based startups.
Correct.
Can you share or some of them from Atlanta Tech Village? Maybe.
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 We have over 200 startups, so chances are high. Mm-hmm.
But we'll get them in here after the event, maybe. All right. We'll do.
Yeah.
When we come back, let's come back and do kind of a recap.
For sure.
Yeah.
Can you help us with that?
Sure.
Are you going to be involved in it post event as well?
Yeah, I'll be there
all
day.
Unless she gets the check.
See, for all you could know, be her startup.
Exactly.
You have a side startup?
I'm working on it.
I'm working. I know an angel investor.
I know. I actually, yeah.
So what has it been like working with Steve Case's team?
It's been great. The thesis that they have about this event, and actually, to be honest, we feel like Atlanta has already risen. So part of the challenge in this has been, well, Atlanta's huge, and trying to pick things to visit in one day has been so
really?
Challenging, so
right.
challenging. I mean, there's so many things to show him, places to go, companies to visit, political leaders to meet, and it can't all take place in one day because we really and truly have so much
going on.
Mm-hmm. And so this is an opportunity for us to, for the rest of the country, to see what is happening here because I don't think everybody knows.
Now, is the event where he's awarding the money, is that happening at Tech Village or where is that
No, it's
happening?
Actually not. So the whole day he will be visiting, he's visiting the village in the morning, meeting with some of our startups there. Then he'll be participating in a startup crawl through the whole city, visiting Ponce City Market, going over to Opportunity Hub on the west side of town, mm-hmm. into Tech Square at Georgia Tech's incubator, ATDC. And then he'll be going to Opera Nightclub and there'll be a fireside chat, the pitch competition, and then a party.
So the 8, the finalists will have, what's the pitch? What do they have? They have a few minutes or what's the format?
It's probably like a 5-minute pitch with some Q&A. So there's a panel of judges who will be asking them some questions and then they'll make the decision together. But I'm sure that since it's Steve Case's money, he'll have some some say in that.
So now how can the companies that aren't amongst the 8 get involved?
So they should come to that event in the afternoon, come to the fireside chat, come to that pitch competition.
This is all open to the public?
It's all open to the public. There are almost 500 people RSVP'd already, so it's going to be really great.
Well, and it's going to be a fantastic event, but we need to not lose sight of the fact that as a community, Tech Village in particular, but some of those other places that you mentioned, we're supporting entrepreneurs
yes.
every day. There's something going on in multiple places around this city
yes.
every day, and there are people who have the same value system and want to accomplish some of the same kinds of things that Steve Case does week in, week out. And I just want to make sure we don't lose sight of that.
Yeah. There's so many wonderful resources in Atlanta these days. And I'll give a quick plug for one called Hypoponymous. They really consolidate a lot of that information. They have a great event calendar, a great blog. They're writing up profiles on companies, on individuals, and on a lot of the resources. Some of the resources in this room, in fact, are really great things for the startup community.
So now, as community manager at the Village, what is your role?
So I serve to connect our villagers to outside things. So strategic partnerships. I've met a lot of people in this room through my role, trying to help those companies there grow. And really beyond just the folks in the Village, we do a lot of workshops, a lot of events and things so the general public can come. And the whole goal is to try to create an impact 10,000 jobs over the next 10 years in Atlanta and really bring Atlanta to the top. It's already a great place to do business. The ingredients are here. We have all the resources you need. It's time to let folks know about that.
Now, is there any space left at the Village or are you guys kind of filled up right now?
We're all full right now. We do have a waiting list, but things are constantly changing. We have companies graduating out. One just moved out this past weekend. And so
who is that? Who can we
that get? Was Yik Yak. Yik Yak is moving just down the street to Piedmont Center.
Oh, wow. So that's a graduate, but you've had other graduates, right?
We have. Insight Pool is another recent graduate. BitPay graduated out last year, and there's some more on the way.
What does graduate mean? They need more space than you have
yeah,
available?
Yeah, yeah. So like we were talking about earlier, that gap between where you're working out of your house and then where you can take a 7-year lease somewhere, we fill that gap. And so you graduate out at the point where you're kind of steady and stable and can take on something more permanent. And you start to see where a company has really created its own individual culture. We kind of are the culture a little bit at the beginning when it's just one or two or three people. The community as a whole comes together and mm-hmm. creates this culture. But then as the companies grow, they kind of have their own individual things that they do to identify themselves.
Now, are you filled up to the point as a co-working space that an individual who just wanted to kind of drop in and there's no space for that person?
You can do that. So we have a day pass. You could just come work for the day. There's an amazing coffee shop on site where you can always come there. And we do sell some individual desk memberships. We are, I think, almost all full on the reserve desk, but still have some hot desks open.
And then one of the benefits of being part of the ecosystem is that there's a lot of mashups happen, right? Like you might be on a venture and you think, wow, this is going great. And all of a sudden, that's not going to work out.
Exactly.
But you can either find another person that might be a good fit.
All the
you
time.
Guys
recycling the talent always
right?
happens. Always, whether it's it didn't work out when you were working over there. There's like a whole 200 other companies you might could work at, or if the company itself didn't work out, recycling back into the ecosystem is frequent.
You see that all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a paradigm shift for a lot of people and companies, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To have that work, it's literally the person two desks down from you might become your next partner.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you've seen that happen?
We have quite a bit. Mm-hmm.
And what's the most rewarding part of the job for you? Because you have, it's
what a cool job.
I know, but there's
cool.
so much action. There's never a dull moment there.
Oh gosh. No way. Never.
Right?
Never. It's never boring. It's never dull. It's kind of a 24-hour job, but it's super exciting. And really seeing the companies achieve, like watching GitGat go from two guys who wandered in and rented two individual desks to now there's, I think, 40 or 50 people in their company and they've taken, you know, $75 million in investment. So it's really neat to see those kinds of things happen. But you don't even have to grow to 50 people. I mean, seeing someone get their first customer or get, like, you know, a first big break. I mean, that
like everybody
is really
celebrates
exciting.
Like as a community manager, do you guys do things like
we
that?
We have a gong, this giant gong. So we'll have people bang the gong and then we'll do a little video and put it on Twitter. So we love to celebrate those types of things.
Mm-hmm. All right. And so we're going to get the crazy eight back. Is that what you call them? The crazy eight, the eight people that are going to
the finalists.
Oh yeah.
So we're going to get them back in a couple of weeks or whatever makes sense. Karen, you'll help coordinate that. And let's make sure one more time that people know where to go for
this thing. The event is Rise of the Rest, and it's riseofrest.com. And all the events are happening next Thursday, May 7th.
And the Tech Village website?
AtlantaTechVillage.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing that story letting us know what's going on. And thanks to all of the guests. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.